So what you won't realise is this is my third attempt at recording this podcast. Some days it's hard to find the necessary peace and quiet. Hello, one and all. Welcome to podcast 21. Blimey, we are clocking them up. This is the third go recording this podcast. It's hard to find time and space in the studio and in our busy day. And eventually I tried. I was within about 60 seconds of finishing the recording and then was interrupted. And I've tried a couple of times to record it from that point on in. But do you know what? I just lost my train of thought completely. It appears it's quite easy to derail my train of thought. I thought it was a bit more solid than that. But no, distracted too easily. Could not get back into it. A beautiful week. My, what a beautiful week. The temperature is still up in the 30s round here. I know for those of you in South America or maybe in parts of Europe, Italy, where we have a lot of people who've bought the book, so listen to the podcast. Then, of course, I know you're used to these temperatures, but this is Britain and we are frankly not. It's hot. Everything about everything is just running slightly slower than it would normally, me included. We've also this week run a survey. So Mastering Portrait Photography is due to go live in the next few weeks. We're hoping for the 1st of August it's going to go live without too much publicity, but it'll be there. People will be able to subscribe and join, and we'll do it nice and gently just to make sure we iron out any of the last niggles and glitches, because there's going to be some. There's no doubt about that. We've tested it and tested it and tested it, and we've had a happy bunch of beta testers on there now. Thank you, by the way, all of you, one and all, for your efforts in both testing the site and completing the survey for us. But they've been on there for about 8 weeks, 12 weeks, helping us iron out stupid mistakes, little glitches, spellings, things that are not clear. But I know the minute we open the doors to a wider audience, we're going to find things. So we're hoping for a nice soft launch around about the 1st of August, give or take, with a full set of publicity a little bit later in the year. So really excited about that. The survey results have been really interesting. An awful lot of people seem to think the podcast is all right. And I'm taking a lot of confidence from that, given that all I am doing is sitting here in a tiny little room with a microphone, a pair of headphones and a recorder, and blathering away about things that intrigue me about the previous week and about portrait photography in particular. So thank you for those of you who've listened. Thank you for those of you who filled in the survey. And in particular, thank you to everyone who thinks that what we're doing is all right, which does appear to be the vast majority of you. And I am very, 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 very pleased about that. Rest assured. So it's been a week. Of course, it's been a week. So what have I done this week? Well, in the past week, we've run a workshop. I love running workshops for a million reasons, mostly because it forces me to slow down and think about what it is I do, think about how I do it, and find ways of explaining it. And I absolutely love the process. And I think on the whole, I produce far more, I don't know if I produce better images, but I certainly produce them more efficiently. So when I'm working with a client and I'm sketching with a camera, I'll take quite a lot of pictures to get where I'm going. But of course, it's not so easy to do that when you've got an audience. Really what you do is you set the shot up and you talk your way through it, explaining your thinking, explaining what you're seeing, create the picture and then show the back of the camera to illustrate all of the points. And it's a much more slow, considered way of working, not my normal bouncing around the scene and sketching as I go. Though I did do that for a brief bit of the workshop. Somebody said, I can't remember what the question was. It was something like, is this how you normally work? And I, of course, no. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll show you. And just for about a minute, I did what I normally do and just produced images. And I can produce them at quite a rate. And I like doing that. We reject a lot. Not because they're no good, but because I don't need all of them. So on the whole, we keep about 1 in 10. And I keep really detailed logs of all of this to check that I'm shooting where I should be. So that if I'm rejecting more than 90%, something might be adrift. The eventual aim is to bring the number down. But at the moment, it's between 1 and 8, and 1 in 10 images goes all the way through to the client. But it's a beautiful workshop, beautiful models, a great location, an old steam station, part of the Watercress line down near Winchester. Just great. A little bit of logistics to go with it, but it was just great fun. The only problem was that the sun was directly overhead. It was really hot. And so we actually spent most of the time trying to figure out ways of creating beautiful portraits out of limited light. At some point, I'll post some of those pictures both on my own site, which is paulwilkinsonphotography.co.uk, but also on masteringportraitphotography.com. A beautiful wedding. So the day after that, a beautiful and another hot day, beautiful wedding. There was only 14 people there. It was tiny, but absolutely lovely. And my favourite bit was the look of surprise on the bride's face when she realised the Rolls-Royce Dawn Aero was not just the car she was travelling in, it was the wedding gift from the groom. Yep, he surprised her by buying her a Rolls-Royce coupe. This thing was stunning, and the look on her face when she figured it out was absolutely priceless. But then it would be, wouldn't it? It is probably the most glorious wedding gift I've ever been privileged to photograph. I'm sure there's others out there that could beat me on it. Maybe somebody's bought them an aircraft or a whole house. I've no idea. But this was a wedding gift. This was a Rolls-Royce. This was beautiful. Such a lovely couple, such a lovely wedding. Great fun to do. With only 14 people, of course, it's really relaxed and chilled because there's only so many photos you can take of each person. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. Had a hearing dog shoot, a long one this week, another 3-hour shoot. Lots of stuff for one of the magazines. I absolutely love working with the hearing dogs, and I promise at some point we will produce some videos and some walkthroughs on how to photograph dogs. I know it's me that shied away from it just at the moment. Almost literally, we're keeping it on a leash. But the reason is that we wanted to focus on the people aspect of portrait photography initially before we start diversifying into other areas, though I know people are asking about it. Of course, having photographed thousands and thousands of dogs with my time at the Hearing Dogs, we're in a pretty good position to talk about the techniques and talk about the lighting and expressions and all of those things. However, just bear with us while we launch with just people-based portrait photography, just at the moment. On that note, we've done 3 family shoots this week. Beautiful, and one of them in particular was just great. Drove down to the family, a couple of hours driving in the Land Rover. Arrived, expecting to spend a couple of hours photographing as a family, and instead we had lunch. We just had lunch. It was lovely. They sat me at the head of the table. They'd catered for me. It was roast chicken. It was a big family. They'd all got together. And I was there as part of that celebration. And it was just wonderful. The nicest thing ever. The only challenge I had was we'd promised Jake, our son, who's been working flat out with a catering company in the past week, that we'd do him roast chicken when he got him from work, when he got him from his work on Sunday. So we'd got a chicken and I was going to prep that and get it barbecued as a roast dinner. So I was trying really hard to be polite and eat just enough, because the food was delicious, don't doubt that for a second, but just enough that I wouldn't be full and I'd still want my roast dinner when Jake got home from his work, because I just thought that'd be really harsh if he got home and it's like, we haven't bothered, we're just having sandwiches because frankly I'm full. But he did. We did do it. We did barbecue this beautiful chicken in our lovely charcoal-fired barbecue and had a beautiful roast dinner. Oh, there's an interesting one. I valeted the car. Well, I say the car, the Land Rover. Now, the Land Rover is a bit of a beast to valet, but I took it up to the valeting team in Aylesbury, which is a couple of miles from here, and for £20 had the best valeting ever. And what actually I was amazed by is how organised the team who did it were. I think at one point I counted 7 guys working on the car. They each knew what they were doing. They each knew which bit they had to do. They each knew their role. And it was unreal. I think I was stood there for, tops, 10 minutes. No more than that. The whole car stripped, cleaned, mats out, hoovered, back in, freshened up, inside of the windscreen cleaned, outside of the windscreen cleaned. dashboard cleaned, all of the seats polished, the wheels, each one of those was properly, these like an acid substance to get rid of brake dust and things off it. Each tyre was then tyre blacked. It had been washed, it had been polished, and I drove out of there with this pristine looking Land Rover after no more, honestly, it was 10 minutes. The only thing I discovered, and I knew this already really, is that the Land Rover isn't waterproof. And as they expect you to be in it while they're jet washing it, I got a good soaking. But the rest of it was really impressive. And it's a real lesson in, if you organise a team well, how much you can achieve. So there's one for a future podcast maybe about organising teams. Saturday was the beer festival here in Haddenham. Now, the beer festival in Haddenham, just to give you an idea of scale, has 150 barrels of ale, plus gin, pims, ciders, oh, you name it. It's the UK's biggest single-day real ale festival, if that's a useful title to hold, I don't know. But it was a beautiful day. It was packed. And, of course, it was the day that England were playing Sweden in the World Cup, and the organisers had booked and set up a huge LED screen. So we had not only did we have one of the UK's greatest beer festivals, we also had the football going on, which we won. So it was a very happy day out in the sunshine. And myself and Sarah were working on the Pimm's Bar. Now, I think there's about 5,500 people at this festival, and I think about 4,500 of them bought Pimm's. We have never worked so hard, flat out for 3.5 hours, just serving glass of Pimm's after glass of Pimm's after glass of Pimm's. Eventually, we ran out of Pimm's, as you'd expect. But it was great. It was lovely to see everybody. Lots of them are my clients, of course. So it's nice to catch up with a few people I haven't seen for ages, and just nice to chat and do our bit for the village, because it raises really useful funds for charities and organisations such as the Scouts and things like that within the village. It actually supports stuff going on in our own community. A real pleasure to be part of it. Great fun, but I was exhausted. However, luckily for me, because I was working so long, obviously I didn't drink too much, so there's no hangover. Yay! Of course, England won. It was 2-0. And while I was watching it, it got me onto thinking about coaching. And how come even these players like Harry Kane, is one of the greatest soccer or football strikers on the planet, still gets coached? If you look at the team that England have around them, they have fitness coaches, they have nutrition coaches, they have psychological coaches, they have technical coaches, they have strategy coaches. They've got so many people around them, and yet these are already the best football players in the world, or some of them. Anyway, you know, obviously different countries are going to argue their players are. I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is that these are the epitome of the top flight footballers. So you'd think they wouldn't need coaching. They don't need to improve, surely. And yet, actually, all they do all week, except for when they're playing matches, and obviously drinking and getting into fights, but that's a different conversation. Obviously, when they're not playing matches, they're being coached. So if it's good enough for top flight sportsmen and women to constantly being coached, to constantly be striving to be better, why as photographers don't we always do that? Why do we sit back and think we can teach ourselves? And it got me to thinking about how important mentoring is. We call it mentoring, they would call it coaching, but it boils down to essentially the same thing. Getting the very best out of you, the very best that you can be, the very best images you can create. And I'm a big fan of both being a mentor and being mentored. And I'm dropping this in here because it occurred to me off the back of the football. You need a mentor. We all need a mentor. We need someone who can look at us and say, do you know what? This is what you're good at. Let's develop that. Let's explore that. And of course, there are ways of being mentored. To be mentored is in itself a skill that you have to learn, because it can feel a bit brutal sometimes when somebody says, well, that's not your best work, is it? When you think it is, because of course you never believe that your work is not as good as it could be. You're always producing the best you can today, but your mentor's job is to say tomorrow you're going to produce something even better. Here's how, go do it. So being mentored requires a skill all of your own, because you have to take that information, you have to take their belief and their energy, and you have to transform that into better and better photographs, if it's photographic and creative mentoring you're having, or run, better in-person sales, if it's marketing and sales mentoring that you're having. Either way, it doesn't really matter. It's all about constant development. I love being in a room full of photographers watching a presentation or a workshop by a photographer. I love going onto YouTube, but none of those are quite the same thing as one-on-one mentoring. It's so important that you can sit with someone, talk through your images, talk through where you're trying to get to, and ask for advice. Have many mentors if you want. I have one. Kevin Wilson is my creative mentor, my photographic mentor, and I trust him implicitly. If he tells me something, you better believe in the coming weeks I'll have figured out what he's talking about and how to add that into my palette of colours or my toolkit, depending on which particular metaphor you want to use, of things I can do. I always do it, and I love spending time with my mentor because I know at the end of it, I'm going to be that little bit better or that little bit more focused, or I'm going to stop making a mistake that I've made consistently. It doesn't really matter. I just love it. And I think it's important. And myself and James Musselwhite got talking about this in our previous podcast at the end of the workshop, because there was someone we did sit and spend a little bit of time going through their images. And it's all about finding what's strong in there and trying to find ways of improving the bits that are not quite so good. So you use the bits that are strong in your imagery as an anchor point. It's a bit like climbing a mountain. You put anchor points in and you hold on to them for dear life. You never don't move those. They're the solid bits. But the next bit of the cliff face, you're going to have to reach out. And it's a little bit like that when you're being mentored or trained. You hold on to the bits that you're good at. You get your mentor to help you understand what you're really good at. Don't change that. Don't change that. But then you can build on it. You can take that next reach up the cliff face, that next step towards where you're trying to get to. And you never get there. You never get there. The point is, it's a journey. You've got to enjoy the journey because there's no end game. You're constantly being, well, you're constantly striving for something better tomorrow. And so there's no end game as such. It's just the journey. And you've got to enjoy that too. Anyway, that's my penneth on mentoring. The final bit I was going to talk about today is dealing with a stressful shoot. And I'm going to tell you a story, and hopefully it has some useful insights into how to deal with when things don't go quite to plan. So I was doing a shoot yesterday, a PR shoot. These are PR images for an event that's coming up later in the year. I'm working with an organization who has employed a TV personality to be the front person for this particular event. And my job to them is to create the images that they're going to use for their publicity and marketing. Fairly standard gig, nothing particularly in that that's different or unusual. It's science based. And so we knew some of the shoot was going to be at the Science Museum in London. And originally, I was booked for 8 hours, I think. 8 hours with this, call her the talent, the presenter. 8 hours, combination of on location in the Science Museum in London and out on the street in London and a couple of other locations. Well, with about five or six days to go, the presenter let us know that she's only going to be available for 2 hours. In fact, she said she wasn't available, but when we tried to schedule her in for another date, there wasn't one. So in the end, she came out and said, okay, I'll give you 2 hours. Now, my job is to create the images that are going to sell her and the show that she's fronting to TV audiences. So I'm not entirely certain what had happened, but it's not ideal from our point of view. So, okay, 2 hours it is. I'll have to deal with that. So we changed the scope of the shoot very quickly and decided to do all of it just at the Science Museum and to see how many different images, locations, feels, ideas, creatives, whatever you want to call it, we could generate in the space inside the building, plus a couple outside the building. So which we did. So we arrived, myself and Sarah arrived about 3 hours before the shoot was due to start. We met up with a client. We walked the venue top to tail to make sure that we understood where we could go. And I figured out the fastest route. It's a little bit like the traveling salesman problem where you're given a whole series of locations and you have to find the fastest route. It's an artificial intelligence test, as it happens, for seeing if you've got a good algorithm for determining shortest distance and optimal paths and things. It's quite well known. It's called the traveling salesman problem. So effectively, I've got that problem. And we don't really want to have to walk too far because it's full of children. The whole place is just full. And I mean full of kids from school. And so we're having to make sure that we're using the shortest possible routes and avoiding the really busy parts. And not only have I got to find routes between these locations, I've also got to be able to photograph in them. Anyway, we put together a plan and we got it more or less down, sat down, had some lunch, agreed our plan of attack, and waited for the presenter to arrive at 1 o'clock. Well, come 1 o'clock, there's no sign of her. Eventually, we start getting texts saying she's been caught up in traffic in London because of the RAF flypast. Now, London's that kind of city, right, where if you have 100 aircraft going over your head, the cars stop. The whole of London is just stopped. You can't get from A to B, and I understood that might happen. But I kind of hoped that she'd have allowed much more time to get there, as myself and Sarah had done. Sadly, that wasn't to be. And so she was running late. So we're beginning to panic a little bit. And I think it's okay, I've got nothing after this shoot. So if we have to slide the time back, don't worry. As long as I'm back, you know, at a certain time, it's not such a problem. But there's nothing in the diary that says I've got to be back at this time. So if we have to slip the 2 hours, then that's fine. Eventually, 50 minutes later, she turns up. And the first thing she says is, I'm really sorry, I've got to go to another meeting after this at 3:30, and I'm going to have to allow more time to get there now I know the roads are bad. Now, luckily in the end, she didn't leave early, but she did have to leave on time, which means I now know I've got to create in an hour what, when we planned it 6 months ago, we had thought would take 8 to 10 hours. And that's one of those moments when everything you have is all about making the very best that you can in the situation that you're in. So I didn't panic. None of us panicked. We're not panickers particularly. It was nice and calm. We figured out what we could do. We figured out what we'd have to drop because it would just take too long. We figured out what we're going to do in post-production because I won't have the time to create the images in camera. So as long as I shoot in a certain way, we have the flexibility in post-production to create them. And so actually everything went back to a very basic principle, which is how do we boil this down to be the most efficient we can be with the time that we have, still being creative, still creating something that hopefully is going to be compelling and useful for the press, but doing it in a tiny amount of the time that we thought originally. And off we went. We ran around the we ran around the Science Museum. We took the pictures. We set ourselves up really quickly. We moved in very short. We reordered everything, so we went in the shortest possible route. Now, the presenter is lovely. She's absolutely fantastic. And she's a real natural. So luckily, it wasn't like a normal portrait shoot where I'm having to work to get someone to engage with the camera or to relax. Literally, I said to her, look, we need a shot of you looking happy. And she looked happy. And it was as simple as that. And it was a proper, natural, big smile, really happy. And then she could switch it off again as well if I needed something serious. We rattled through about 400 images. I think there's about 20, 25 different looks. And in the end of it, I've been through the images and I'm really happy that what we have is useful to the client, to the BBC and to the programme makers, because that's what actually this is all about. We don't need hundreds of images. We just need a few, but they just need to be great. And thankfully, I'm fast with the camera. I know the camera really well. The reason I didn't panic, by the way, is because I've practiced and practiced and practiced with the kit. Even now, if I get a new camera in, I'll bring a model in, just spend the afternoon with them, making sure I know what all of the controls are. I won't go straight out. I've only ever used Nikon cameras. And you'd think I'd know them by now, and I do. But nonetheless, bring somebody in, put it through its paces, make sure I understand the differences to the old models, make sure that I understand how it sits in my hands, how it feels, what the color rendering looks like on the screen. I'll bring the images off the camera and put them onto edit, and make sure I understand what the screen is showing me. I do that every time, and I've been doing that for years because my job, once I'm in front of the client, is to take pictures, not scratch my head or panic, and both of those are really bad. My job is to take pictures. And so the reason we could do it is we were well organized. I knew the camera really well. I knew what it was capable of. I knew what the lighting was going to do. I knew how to do it, and we've just legged it and ran our way through it. Now, obviously, time will tell if it turns out the images are rubbish. I'll re-record this podcast with the whole lament of why it's not my fault. It's all to do with someone turning up really late. However, I'm really happy. The images do look great. She was brilliant. And we did what should have taken 8 hours. And next year, we'll go back to taking 8 hours because I don't want to have to deal with that rate of or that rapid firing. I don't want that to be the norm. However, it was a brilliant thing to do. And it was a real lesson in why it's been a good idea for me to learn my camera really, 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 really well. And on that happy note, it's hot. I'm going to go back to doing what I'm doing, which is editing images for our clients. I have a hearing dog shoot to get out the door, so I'm going to go and edit those. And in the meantime, hope the weather's really nice for you. Look out for the details of Mastering Portrait Photography going live in the coming weeks. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.